o'clock, so we can move to time certain item 1062.
1062, direct the Office of Management and Finance to solicit bids for the Portland Building Reconstruction Project in an amount not to exceed $195 million, with construction to be completed no later than 2020.
Call up our Chief Administrative Officer and his team to make a presentation. Actually, you should go ahead and read the other two as well while they're coming up.
1063, direct the Office of Management and Finance to develop office space rates for specific city-owned or city-leased facilities located in the Central Business District to achieve rate equalization. And 1064, direct the Office of Management and Finance to develop a 1% for community opportunities and enhancements proposal for the Portland Building Reconstruction Project.
Well, welcome and good morning. This is a very important decision for the city that our Chief Administrative Officer and some great citizens who've come forward to help him as volunteers to figure out what our options are have done together. And I just want to thank both of you and Fred, you and all of your team for bringing the options forward that you think are the most responsible, and for now to us to give the private sector a chance to respond and tell us what they can do to help fix the building and put it right and put the city in a position to do its work for the next 100 years. So this is one of those long-term investments that done right will make a big difference. I think we all wish it had been done right the first time, but now we have a chance to get it right, and I think with your good leadership and support, we will. So thank you for the good work, and explain what's before us, please.
Okay, thank you very much. Fred Miller from Office of Management and Finance. My security person here is Tom Walsh, who's also on our advisory committee, and you'll hear from him in a minute. I've had a chance to speak to all of you about the resolutions, and I don't want to go into too much detail, given that we've had some individual meetings, but I know that not everyone in the listening audience has heard all of this, so I want to say what I see as the game plan, and then I know you'll get, or I suspect you'll get some public comments. There are three resolutions, and simply stated, one of them directs us to renovate the Portland building for no more than $195 million and finish by the end of 2020. The second one is to equalize rates for city bureaus within the Central Business District. And the third one has to do with community benefits or community enhancements and directs us to, or you would assign 1% of the construction costs to that purpose, and then directs us to have a process to talk to all of the interested parties to develop a recommendation to you on how that money would be allocated. And I would expect to go through each of these. Every one of us will take 5 minutes or less, I think, in the presentation. So I'd like to think that within a half hour, you'll have heard about the three resolutions, hear public comment, and then hopefully make decisions, if that's the way you would like to proceed.
Please.
In terms of the project itself, you'll recall, given our work sessions, that we started off with an idea when I took this job of spending $95 million to repair this, or to improve the seismic, repair the leaks, and the cost to move employees out of the building and back in. And we looked for alternatives, since that was the only thing I saw on the table in front of me at the time. And we appointed an advisory committee from the private sector to examine all of the alternatives. And what evolved was, for a variety of reasons, the best alternative would be to invest in the Portland building and spend, at that time the estimate was $175 million, but we're saying $195 given that those numbers are a year or two old. And I'm not sure we're going to make it to $195, but we're saying no more then. So what our project would do now is take care of the leaks, address the seismic, replace the mechanical electric plumbing, which needs to be done, hopefully get some very livable office space, and look at floors 1 and 2 to make them better community spaces, which I think is necessary. So we can do all of that while preserving the architectural integrity of the building. And it does also, as a handout I gave you during the work session, captures a number of values or policies of the city. We would preserve the adjacency to City Hall, which is important to a number of people. There's a longstanding policy of having a government center where civic buildings are within this center, whether they're federal, state, or city. It's the best green alternative, the best use of resources. It is accessible by public transit, and it does preserve an asset that's on the historic register. And beyond all that, and I was thinking there's a decent argument even if it were less expensive to go somewhere else. We couldn't do that consistent with the government center policy, but if it were, but it happens to be the best financial deal, as well as providing all of these values. So we're looking for a decision to move ahead, and it doesn't mean it's the last time you get a chance to address the Portland building, because we have an RFP out now for an owner's representative. You would get to approve that. We would have a design, build, relocate contract you'd get to approve. Bond authorization you'd get to approve. So you'll have a chance to see that. But what it does for me, and I'm sure Tom will address this because it originally was his idea, was to say, let's put a stake in the ground on not spending for everything. Look at trade-offs, make it fit within that amount, and let's get it done by a given date, because these things can drag on. And I think it gives us an ability to manage the project and get to the outcome. I would add one more thing, that as we're looking at design, build, relocate, there's a convincing argument that we could do some of the reconstruction in the building with employees still in the building. And depending on how you do the seismic improvements, there are ways to not just completely empty the building. And my hope would be that given that we have about a $30 million item for moving employees out and back, that we could save millions on that if we could reconstruct it with some employees remaining in the building. So that's our intention. That's what that resolution would do. Tom.
Fred, thank you very briefly. Fred has assembled a small committee, not too small, but small committee of advisors. And in essence, we bring three things to the table. One is experience. Part of experience is you've done things where you've made mistakes, or you've had nearly life-threatening experiences, and you know how not to repeat them. I think that will turn out to be quite valuable to Fred. Second, we bring collectively real determination as to schedule and budget. In Fred's opening comments, he used a word which I almost never use, which is hopefully. I have no hope about this. I have a plain determination, and so does the advisory committee. The budget is $195 million not to exceed, period, and a schedule which is the fall of 2020, and not to change. That is not to say with the diverse constituencies, both employees of the city who occupy the building, the public who has considerable interactions within the building, won't continuously and appropriately bring things that we may not have anticipated today. That is a given. It happens on every project. It is never a surprise. Only the dimension and the detail of the issue is possibly a surprise. They do not impact schedule or budget. There are trade-offs that have to be made. Literally, they will be made up until the last month of the construction process. But the budget and the schedule does not change. And I think collectively the advisory committee can help Fred and the really very talented city team that's undertaking what I've said to you before, I think is one of the more challenging construction projects in the city's history.
Yes, please.
Tom, you're a very experienced developer, so you've brought the wisdom of having done complex development to this assignment. And I know we've had lots of conversations about this, but this may be the first time the public actually engages on it. So I want to just ask you to respond to the two comments that I hear most frequently when I talk to people who maybe aren't following it that closely, so that you're getting sort of their common sense view of it. The first is that we should just sell the building and build somewhere else, and we can save a lot of money. You looked at that option, and can you tell us why that was rejected?
I can tell you the cost part of it. that this project at the $195 million is well within the range and probably the low-cost alternative. The more important question, which is the policy one, is something that you as the appropriate body have made, that a building which is on the historic landmark needs to be preserved. I concur with that, but that is not a decision we have made. The council has made it, the responsibility that Fred and his team have and that the advisory committee will help with is how do we execute that within the schedule and within the budget.
But I think it's important what you just said about the low-cost option, because it may actually be counterintuitive when people are looking at a big number and thinking about, you know, what our needs are. But we looked at selling the building, demolishing it, rebuilding on-site or off-site, and I believe you concluded in all those scenarios that it would be more expensive. Am I right?
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. So the other question I had has to do with the $195 million figure. And how confident can we be if we structure this a certain way that no matter what happens, we come in at or under $195 million? How realistic is that?
Absolute confidence that we will. There is a fact which impacts any project, public or private, that the very best time to set the budget is in the last week before completion of the project. We will know more. We will always know more. We can do a better job of setting the budget. The hardest thing to do, but the most important, is to set it very early and to make all decisions consistent with that. I think we've explained to many of you things like the West Side Light Rail project. For a series of appropriate reasons, we set the budget for that project far too early, far too early. Everybody told us that it was far too early. There were too many unknowns, and the decision was this project will never proceed without the budget being fixed. We will never receive the federal appropriation. We set the budget, we set the schedule, and they never varied.
That's important to remember. You know, Mr. Walsh has had a private sector construction career, but he's also led TriMet. And those of us who've worked in transit world are actually accustomed to setting the budget and sticking to it and actually having a federal overseer in the form of the Federal Transit Administration that is completely intolerant of budget overruns. The public sector has perhaps an undeserved reputation for cost overruns. You know, we all know about government cost overruns. They have them at the federal level all the time. Transit projects don't. As a general rule, transit projects don't, and they especially don't here. And Tom's part of that success story. So that's, in effect, we're importing that approach to this project of setting the budget early and making all expectations consistent with that and making choices consistent with that, because we'll make a lot of them.
Thank you. So we had a work session on how we're going to pay for this, but maybe not everybody was watching that work session. Could you, for those watching at home who are wondering where is the city suddenly finding $195 million from, how are we going to pay for this?
I will make some comments, but Ken Rust is going to succeed us up here, and he could talk in more detail. So let him do that. But the easy answer is there's a policy that the city puts in a 5% equity contribution if we bond for the project, which we intend to do, and we've talked in terms of 20-year bonds that would then be paid off in lease rates.
So basically taking out a mortgage in part.
Yes.
Thank you. And then my second concern is about the services that are on the ground floor, particularly the two restaurants and the child care center. Obviously, they would benefit if we can do the keeping people in on site as much as possible. What provisions are we thinking about making for those services?
Two answers to that. On the child care, we found an alternative site that is about four blocks away that we want to invest in and make available, which I think is very convenient, not only for City of Portland, Portland building and City Hall employees, but also it's closer to the 1900 building. So it would be more accessible and it's a little larger. So we plan to do that. In terms of the vendors, and you may hear from some of them today, there's no legal obligation for us to do anything, but I think from a moral end, there's probably some relocation that we could help with, but also in terms of the design, we want to be sensitive to how long they can stay. if we have a number of employees in the building, it could be that there will be viable concerns for a while. If we have to empty the building, then obviously they need to go elsewhere. But I think the council probably has a decision on that, that we have talked to them, but that's not a decision that we can make in terms of financial commitment.
I just note for myself that I'm sometimes totally dependent on those food services for being able to grab a quick lunch. So if we can help them out, I would appreciate it.
I pass through every morning for coffee. So.
Mr. Saltzman.
So, you know, I appreciate very much the philosophy we're bringing here of it's going to be $195 million and that's it. But, you know, I'm still skeptical. As I said at our work session, I think, you know, the council has a hard time saying no, and I can see scenarios where we will be approached about things from our employees, about things they really want, maybe when it's at the 90% level. So tell me, who does the owner's representative report to?
Well, I think without answering that one in particular, this idea sort of keys off your comment that if you have difficulty saying no, my sense is if you say to us, to OMF or to me, get this done within 195, it gives me the ability to say no. And it's not that you don't have other opportunities to look at it, but I would take this very seriously and deal with the advisory committee on managing this within those parameters. And if anything, I think we're going to come in lower because I think that if we don't have to move all the employees out, we can do that. It's not that when you have other opportunities to look at this, you couldn't say, we know we told you 195, but we want to do this something extra, but I'm not going to do that. So you're going to find us managed within 195.
And I assume there's a contingency of 10% on that 195?
No. The actual construction project out of the 175 was $79 million. And then the contingencies, the 1%, 2%, other things add up. So, yeah, we do have a contingency built in.
And then I guess I was reading the CBO write-up this morning, and it's here in the resolution, too. There's an $11 million cost associated with moving the data center, which isn't part of the budget. I guess that seems like a lot of money.
It does seem like a lot of money. I have not seen the data center number because I didn't think we had developed that yet. I thought we were still looking at it.
I thought I read that in the CBO write-up.
Well, I haven't seen that write-up. Yeah. But there is a data center issue that we have to talk about separately. I'm not trying to make that part of today's discussion, but I'd be happy to bring that back anytime.
Okay. I mean, it seemed, like I said, if that number was right, if I recalled that correctly, that's a big number, and I just have a hard time understanding how.
Okay. Well, I think it requires some discussion. I know people are looking at it, but at this stage, people are looking at alternatives. And regardless of the project, I think we need to change the data center, and we have to worry about disaster recovery. But I have that on a separate page.
I mean, no doubt about it. It's important, the data center. Right. It's the sticker shock of $11 million. It reminds me of when we were discussing the sustainability center. And the cost to move the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability across the street was estimated to be $4 million. I could never get my arms around how could it possibly cost $4 million to move a Bureau across the street. So I'm having that same sort of shock about that figure. So.
We will definitely get back to you, but probably get back to the whole council to discuss that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Fish.
Fred, you mentioned the value of having a government center and having basic functions of government located in a geographically proximate area. So if we're going to make this kind of investment, I think it really is important that we make at the same time a commitment to maximizing our existing space. And I've heard of sort of conversations that are in the ether about possibly investing in new office space in other parts of the city. And frankly, while I can understand that is superficially attractive, if we're going to make this kind of investment and we're looking at our portfolio that's accessible to this building, I hope our focus is taking full advantage of our existing space long before we consider any new space.
No doubt. And we can make this a much more efficient building, and with technology there are opportunities to have different configurations, and we still haven't exhausted the work in other spaces. People say work at home, but there are lots of different options there. So we want to use a space. Interestingly, I'm not smart enough to say what a 50% increase in population in Portland, in the Portland area, does over the next 15 years, but it's not going to lead to fewer employees. And I think we just have to look at all of that. But yes, we'll make the best use.
And the other thing, I just want to piggyback off of a question that Commissioner Fritz asked. So you explained to us how this would be financed with a bond financing and an equity contribution. So what's the general fund contribution, and what's the contribution from all the users?
Let's let Ken address that, because when he talks about equalizing rates, he can do that. And it really depends on who's in the building. And there's a small thing about getting Multnomah County off the 14th and 15th floors and moving BES in that I think we'll accomplish. But once you can't say exactly the contributions until you know who the occupants are. And we're close to that, but Ken knows more than the rest of us right now.
Do you have a question?
Yes, a couple. Well, first, I just wanted to say for the record that I personally was not particularly invested in maintaining this building because of its historic building. My interest is in what's the most cost-effective and rational thing to do, regardless of the historic status. So I was persuaded by the case that you've made in the materials that actually this is the most cost-effective option. I think that a lot of people feel intuitively that it must be a lot cheaper to build a building somewhere else in the city. You reached a different conclusion. I think it would be helpful if you could walk through that a little bit.
We actually have a handout that maybe all of you have. I don't have it with me at the moment. Are you looking to walk through that today? Or?
I'd like actually just sort of for the audience. I mean, I have gone through that handout, but I think it would be useful for the audience, you know, both here and on TV, to hear a brief summary of it.
A brief summary, and then if you want more, there are people in the audience who can do that. We looked at land prices in four or five different areas. We found an area in the southeast where land prices actually were more attractive, but when you compared the cost of construction, it's lots less expensive to use the existing shell because you're not looking for new concrete and steel as opposed to all new on the outlying areas. And when you looked at all the costs together, it came out that this was the lowest cost alternative. It would be more of a dilemma if it were not. And then you get into the historic building, because I think that's a real problem as well. If we were to leave it empty or move out or try to destroy it, I think that's a problem. So I'm happy that the numbers came out that way. But we did look at all the alternatives, and there is a five-page paper with that, and this was the best option. And the advisory committee has reviewed all that.
Another point I wanted to raise is that in terms of seismic strengthening of the building, what the $195 million reflects is a package that includes strengthening the building to current code standards, which means basically life safety.
That's correct.
That the building will not fall down on the people in it or people outside.
That's correct.
That is different, of course, from being able to immediately reoccupy the building after an earthquake and have people work out of it. And I realize there probably isn't going to be much appetite to talk about a higher cost for reconstructing this building, but I would like to see if at some point in the next, you know, several months we can take a look at what would it cost in order to have a building that we could reoccupy immediately, and then we can think about whether it's worth it.
We had a very preliminary discussion earlier this week specifically on that subject, and from the minimal standard, my term minimal standard, that is currently envisioned to a upgrade, which is much closer to what you're suggesting, is a relatively modest cost. Needs absolutely to be considered. I was persuaded listening to the structural engineers at that $195 million total budget, why wouldn't we make that a highest of priority? So no decision made, yes, but it's not off the charts.
And you will get a look at this.
Thank you very much.
I think that's a really important point, Commissioner. I was under the impression that it would be still standing after the big one. So I'm definitely interested in looking how much would it cost.
There'll be more. There are gradations, and the idea would be standing after some repairs, people could re-enter. Our current level is lower than that. There's a higher standard that Commissioner Novick is referring to. We will lay that out for you. That's part of the analysis.
We're spending close to $200 million. It would seem like if it's a relatively modest increase, that would be well worth the investment.
And it will occur within the 195.
There you go.
those are the classic kinds of things that arise. Gee, it is only 1 or 2 or 3 million. Wouldn't we increase the budget? The answer is no. Thank you. We will not increase the budget. But there are other things that we might have liked that are not as important, and they will not be provided in the building.
Okay, for this one? I mean, I want to do all three, and then
yes, please.
We'll be available.
Let's go through the whole presentation and the others that you have queued up to speak as well.
Okay, so from here we go to Ken Rust and Cindy Nickel from the Port on equalizing rates, and then Andre Baugh will be up here with me talking about community enhancements, community benefits.
Good morning.
Morning, Mayor Hales, members of the City Council. For the record, my name is Ken Rust. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer. Chief Financial Officer, and Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. The resolution before you today directs OMF to develop lease rental rates for city-owned or leased office space in the Central Business District in a manner that equalizes those rates charged to Bureau tenants, regardless of their location. As we discussed in our August work session, we believe that this approach will best achieve the following goals and objectives. First, we think it best conforms to the Council's direction with regard to our space, that our goal is to have bureaus in city-owned space. If we're not in city-owned space, that we would be leasing historic buildings first. It also, I think, allows us over time, as we make this building more efficient in the use of space, to have the potential to bring bureaus that are outside in leased space into our own city-owned space. We also believe it provides the best opportunity for cost certainty and predictability to city bureaus and tenants, both in the short run and in the longer run. It helps to ensure a consistent level of service that is provided by city bureaus, regardless of which building they are in or what lease space they might be in. And then over the long term, our analysis has showed us that the least cost option for us is to own our own space and to have city bureaus in it. And an equalized rate approach that helps us bring bureaus into our own space is one that helps achieve that objective. So those are the reasons why we're proposing this. This is not a new concept. It's been discussed and thought about in years past. We think now is the right time to proceed with it. With me this morning is Cindy Nickel, who is the Chief Financial Officer for the Port of Portland and is also a member of our Portland Building Advisory Committee. I'd like to have Cindy share with you her experience in implementing and managing an equalized rate structure for the port's facilities.
Great. Thanks very much. I've been able to work on staff at airports, including those at Boston, San Francisco, and Portland, for more than 3 decades. And I just wanted to speak to the value of equalized terminal rents that we've seen in the airport industry that has parallels to the equalized office space rents that are proposed in the resolution here. We found that if occupants pay the same rates, then locational decisions can be made without concern about paying more or less rent relative to others, and can instead reflect important factors such as being located near entities with which the occupants need to frequently partner, also having access to infrastructure services that they need in their doing their daily business. Also, rent equalization provides more stable, predictable costs for tenants. There are also benefits to those of us who are administering the facilities. Quite honestly, it helps us to, we can pool the costs, we can manage our debt as an overall portfolio, which provides economies of scale. We spend less time tracking costs by specific area, and as a portfolio, we can manage the different, and we don't have to calculate many different rates. We can also more quickly execute occupant moves and more flexibly meet their space needs. I thought you'd find it interesting to hear about a couple of airports. So here at PDX, we currently do have equalized rents, which we've had for about 5 years, actually 10 years. But in the 1990s, PDX had different rates for 9 different parts of the terminal, dating as far back as 1956. So we had odd situations where an airline at one gate was paying $5 more per square foot than an airline in the very next gate, which without very different space. The other thing, which you may have heard about, equalized rents has made it very easy for us within a few months to negotiate with the airlines a move. So we're going to be moving Alaska and Horizon from the south up to the north and moving United down, and we're going to be able to add some gates on the north for Alaska and Horizon. Those of you who fly out of on Horizon know the pain of that little concourse. But because we've had renovation of our space over time, the quality of the space that we offer airlines is substantially similar, and the airlines have supported changing those equalized rents. In Boston, by contrast, it took several years to negotiate moving one airline. In San Francisco, they do have equalized domestic terminal rates, and they actually reallocate the space every single year based on the evolving needs of the airlines. I wanted to conclude by mentioning an important legal challenge regarding equalized terminal rates that came up in the mid-90s in Miami. The airport wanted to reconfigure space for American Airlines, and the other airlines challenged that. Five carriers challenged that. The case went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., which ruled that the equalized rates are reasonable, saying comparability of facilities must be assessed over time because the equalization method relies on assumptions that different facilities are renovated at different times and that any point in time, some airlines will be using older facilities than others, but over that time, every other airline will obtain new facilities. In other words, the equalization methodology entails measuring comparability over time. Each airline subsidizes construction of new facilities for the others, but then benefits when new facilities are constructed for its own use. I hope that's helpful, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, please.
Ken, thank you for the briefings we've received on this. And I'm persuaded philosophically that the goals and values you outlined are important behind equalization. And I'm particularly, over time, have been concerned about the incentives that were built into our system for people to opt out of using city-owned property, which runs counter to council directives and policy. But I suppose a critic of this approach is going to say that in the short term, there are winners and losers because of the transition to an equalized rate. That is, some people may pay a little more, some people pay a little less. So what do you say to critics who point to that as the flaw in this approach?
Well, at any point in time you take a snapshot, there's that potential that someone could see themselves as a winner or a loser. That was certainly the case when we built the 1900 building. That was the most expensive building for a while, and now it might become less expensive. The Portland building, when the debt service rolled off, is a very inexpensive building right now, and now it's going to become a very expensive building if we go through the renovation. So at any point in time, that argument can be used. I think what has to happen is that you have to look over a longer time frame. And the city is a long-term entity that basically looks at a perpetual need for its building ownership and management. And when you look at it and think about it in that context, then that point-in-time comparison becomes less meaningful, and you get into, the more correct analysis. When you look at us as a landlord, we have to look at the right policy for the long-term because we're going to be here for the long-term.
So on that topic, I have an amendment, which my staff has discussed with Mr. Miller, and I hope we'll have support. The issue is precisely that of what point in time do you pick? It seems to me that the sooner we start this, the better, because, for instance, the Bureau of Development Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability are in the 1900 building currently paying higher costs, and then, boom, as soon as they were figuring that they would be paying lower costs, if we set it in 2020, they will then be paying more to renovate the Portland building. So my amendment is to change the last "be it further resolved" and to have it start in 2017-18 rather than 2021.
This is in 1063.
This is in 1063, correct.
So where is that? The last line of resolution 1063, 2018-19?
17-18. So not starting it next year because that would be too difficult to manage, but that's starting as soon as possible so that BDS and planning get somewhat of a break.
Okay, Commissioner Fritz moves that amendment. I'll second it, and we can discuss it.
Yeah, I'm puzzled. How does that help BDS and planning in adjusting to the rate realities?
They're currently paying higher rates because they're paying off the mortgage for the 1900 building. The mortgage for that will be done in 2020, so they were looking forward to having much lower rates thereafter. So if we equalize starting now, their rates for the next for the 2 years, 18, 19, 20, would be a little lower, so that it would give them a little bit of relief.
So I guess I don't understand this, because the resolve that you're modifying says develop a schedule to achieve. It doesn't say implement a change.
It's to develop it no later than, do the change no later than 17-18 rather than no later than 2021.
That's not how I read this. It says develop a schedule to achieve equalized rates. It doesn't specifically say that you implement any change in rates.
I think that's what it means, but Ken, why don't you?
Yeah, I think what the intent was is that, and the way we crafted the language is that we want to be able to move towards the equalized rate structure. We want to do it in a planned and orderly manner, probably coterminous with the actual repopulation of the Portland building. That made kind of a logical end date, which is the fiscal year 2021. So the question in our mind is, we didn't want to necessarily say, well, we're going to wait till 2021 to do it. Maybe we want to start ramping up to that and have a transition into those blended rates. We also need to integrate that rate change plan into the two things. One, the overall funding plan for the Portland building itself in terms of the construction financing, and then also integrate that with the CBO in terms of impacts on the general fund and other bureaus. So the way we had crafted the language is to provide us some flexibility that gave us options in terms of how we would do that, bring them back then in the budget process for adoption. The proposal or the amendment by Commissioner Fritz would shorten that, if you will, and have it implemented in 17-18. We certainly can do that. That may have some other consequences that we haven't worked through yet, so I can't tell you what that might be. We'd have to work with the budget office to be able to document that.
What would we be implementing under the amendment? Would we be changing people's rates, or would we be determining a schedule for a phase-in?
If I understand the amendment, and perhaps Commissioner Fritz can, if I don't capture it, she can certainly explain it. It's my understanding of what the intent is that we would have a schedule of equalized rates that would be actually implemented in fiscal year 2017-18, not just the development of that schedule, but the actual implementation as well, which will probably be coterminous with the budget process or something like that. I don't know, Commissioner.
That's correct. And my understanding of the Be It Resolved was that we were going to start the rate equalization in 2021. What I'm suggesting is that we started in 17-18.
So the only problem I have with the amendment, Mayor, and the sponsor is sitting here, I don't know what impact it has on any bureau or any budget. And is this issue have to be decided as part of this resolution, or is this something where we could task the CFO to tell us what the implication of this would be and come back to us?
It's they're tasked with developing a schedule, right? So as that schedule would have budget implications, it comes back to us at least in the form of budget, but maybe otherwise. Help me with that. In other words, the direction in this, it is a resolution, not an ordinance. It says the council wants you to do this, and this means go develop a rate schedule that achieves equalization. What are the gates by which the effects of that decision come back to council?
And perhaps we could ask Andrew Scott from the City Budget Office to come up and give his input.
So Andrew, come on up and help. Let's hear it from both sides of the budget equation here. So
I could start, or Andrew could start, and we'll correct each other. I'm not sure.
All right. Fred will be the tiebreaker if there's a disagreement.
It would seem that, if I understand, and it's also
the
what
former
we'd be
CAO.
Doing, what we'd be doing is developing a schedule of equalized rates for the buildings and the leased spaces that we've been discussing. We would calculate what those impacts would be for fiscal year 2017-18, and that would be brought back for council adoption. And it'd be probably part of a budget process, there'll probably be budgetary impacts. I'll let Andrew then talk more specifically about how that might work out.
Yeah, I think that's right. We've been working closely with Ken and his team on this rent equalization. I think the question really just from a timing perspective is, does the schedule contemplate implementation in 17-18, or does it contemplate implementation as late as 2021? I think the way it's written now, it's as late as 2021. My understanding is this would move it forward and say, look, the schedule says we're going to implement it then. From a process standpoint, council could do it separately, but probably would do it as part of a budget process because of all the moving pieces. When that schedule was worked out and we looked through all the implications, we would come back with current appropriation level target adjustments, potentially for general fund bureaus, and then other bureaus would be able to adjust to that, and it would be through a budget process.
My questions are intended to understand the amendment, which I have not seen before. So what's the difference in terms of our budget process of taking this up in 2017 versus 2020? Because what we're having, in any event, we're getting a recommendation, which we will then review and take action on through our budget process. So it is inherently at our discretion. What's the difference in terms of moving that up a couple of years?
I think, as Ken mentioned, at any point in time, there's a snapshot of what those costs would be. I think in 15-16, City Hall debt rolls off. A few years later, the 1900 building debt rolls off. So at any point when you implement this, some bureaus' rents will go up, some bureaus' rents will go down as you equalize.
Yeah, let me think out loud a little bit here and maybe reassure us about what we're doing. To state the obvious, just in case it's not, the total cost of renting office space for city bureaus is not changed by this, right? One way or another, we're paying all the rent we're paying to all the landlords that receive it, whether it's ourselves or someone else. What this resolution deals with is whether that rent is equal across the bureaus or not. If we change from the current environment, in which there are winners and losers, some people are momentarily paying less rent, others are momentarily paying more, but again, the bottom line is the same, it's all us. If we change that sooner, the council will have options about changing the budgets of the relevant bureaus who win or lose in the new calculation. So there could be a Cal target adjustment for a budget, for a bureau, based on the fact that, oh, you used to pay $10,000 a year in rent, now you're paying $20,000 a year. So I'm untroubled by starting sooner because we still have the option to make adjustments and to give bureaus consideration for the fact that their costs have gone up and gone down against other bureaus. But it would be, I think, a good idea. That's why I seconded Commissioner Fritz's amendment. I think it's a friendly amendment. Say, go ahead and start now moving towards equalization. If you need a couple of years to make a transition, you'll have them. If we can get there more quickly, great. But one way or another, let's get out of an environment in which bureaus from time to time have an incentive to move out of the Portland building, and we don't want that anymore.
All right, so then just, and I'm sorry that I'm asking basic questions because I still don't understand the difference. So if I don't understand the difference, I want to make sure I don't wake up tomorrow saying, oh, my God, I didn't see the obvious. So you originally recommended that we develop a schedule by no later than 2021. Why did you pick that date?
A couple of reasons, Commissioner. First, it's consistent with when we would be back in the Portland building. It seemed like a natural place to start it at that point in time when full debt service is coming online for that building. Because what's going to happen between now and then is there's a fair amount of things happening to the cost pool, if you will. We have, as Andrew mentioned, debt service for City Hall falling away, followed by debt service for the 1900 building falling away. So those cost pools going down, and all of a sudden, debt service coming back up and filling that up with the Portland building. So even if we equalized it sooner, you're going to have some movement around the rate schedule that's going to create some of the problems we're trying to avoid, which is some of the instability, which we think if we take that point in time ramping up or starting it at when the cost pool is going to become more stable, we can avoid some of that. Now, those are technical issues. I'm sure that we can work through those with the budget office and with bureaus. But the reason why 2021 or that time frame was to have us work through all of that noise, if you will, in the cost pool and provide, I think, a little bit more stable platform to start with. That was really the logic behind it.
So the mayor views this amendment as a friendly amendment. So what's the advantage of moving it up 3 years?
I think the advantage is, one, we get through this process more quickly. We get people kind of accustomed to this is the way we're going to manage our properties. We have that piece of work behind us, and we have the methodology set up to do it. I think the trade-off is that there'll be maybe a slightly noisier period as we adjust, as the cost pool adjusts to changes in that cost pool. But those are things that we can work out.
I note that the language currently says achieve equalized office space rates no later than FY 2021, so we could do it earlier. I think that this is overall a good policy, and generally I would say that a good policy should be adopted as soon as possible. I do have a parochial concern about PBOT, because I think that PBOT is going to see its rents go up regardless, and PBOT, I think, is in a different position than some of the bureaus because it isn't a general fund bureau, so it doesn't just address issues through a Cal target adjustment. It can't do cost recovery. I mean, it doesn't rely on cost recovery permit fees like BDS, and it doesn't have rates that it can raise like BES and water. So although I accept the fact that PBOT's rents are going to go up at some point, I'm reluctant to sign off on sort of immediate implementation without having a better understanding about how that will affect my bureau.
Okay. So let's take a vote on accepting the amendment, and then we can proceed, I think, unless there are other questions about the amendment.
Well, I guess to put it on the table. Steve's point, Mayor, we don't know what the implication is to the budget of this.
Right.
And there is no actual reason why it has to be taken up today. And it seems to me that while I'm inclined to support it and you view it as a friendly amendment, I would actually love to have an analysis before I did so I understood with my eyes open what this means. And if Commissioner Novick has the same concern, I think we should just hold the amendment. If you're asking us to adopt a resolution today, I think we should go ahead, hold the amendment so we get an analysis and bring it back as a freestanding matter.
One of the options, but Commissioner Fritz, how would you like to proceed?
Well, if the policy of equalization is the fairest thing to do, surely we should do it as soon as possible, as Commissioner Novick said. And yes, there will be winners and losers, but there will be clear losers if we wait until 2021 when, as I said, the 1900 building becomes less expensive. So if we're going to ask the occupants of the 1900 building to pay more for the Portland building renovation, it seems the least we could do is to help them out a little bit with their mortgage right now.
To be clear, I think the drift of the resolution, you've persuaded me as to the merits of the resolution, but simply restating the merits doesn't get me any closer to understanding what the financial implication is. And I think since Commissioner Novick is also in the dark about the financial implication, I'd like to see the analysis of what it is before I cast my vote. And it doesn't impact the timeline that we're under because we're talking about an event 2 years out anyway.
So we can proceed to vote on the amendment if we'd like, because it doesn't sound like you want to withdraw it, Commissioner Fritz. I'm persuaded that we have the option of coming to this sooner, even if we adopt it with the current numbers in it.
So, Mayor, let me just make an observation. This is probably the 100th time we've gotten together to talk about the building.
Right.
I'm being facetious. We have had extensive financial assessments. We've had work sessions. We've had discussions. An amendment is on the table that three of your colleagues have never seen before,
right. That
may or may not have a fiscal impact, and that a couple of us, and Steve is probably the smartest member of the council, still don't know how it actually works. Now, you can take that to a vote, in which case you're forcing the issue. Or you can simply set it over for a couple weeks so we can understand what its implication is. And then we can do it in the collegial way. I don't know why we
would. Perhaps you didn't hear me. I said I am persuaded that we should leave it like it is. So I could withdraw my second. But Commissioner Fritz has put an amendment on the table, and I gave her the courtesy of seconding it. So she can withdraw it, or we can vote it down.
With all due respect, I did raise this issue at the work session as a concern, and have been looking into how could we address that
concern.
So
there's
no particular reason why we have to vote at all on this resolution today. So I would defer to the request to hold this particular resolution over for a couple of weeks.
Any reason that we should act on this particular resolution today? My preference would be that we act on it in its current form and be prepared to return to the schedule at some future time after people have seen the numbers.
Well, then we have to craft another resolution, which
have to tell them to adopt a different schedule. It says no later than.
I think we need to give certainty to the City Budget Office and others as to what schedule they're supposed to be looking out for over the next several years.
Okay. So how would you like to proceed?
I'd like to not vote on the resolution at all today.
I'm not persuaded that we shouldn't go ahead and approve it, and we can always revise it later. So I'm going to withdraw my second. And unless there's another second for your motion, then your motion dies for lack of second, and we'll take testimony on and consider adopting the resolution as it is before us. Again, as I said, Commissioner Fritz, I think you're right that we should try to do this sooner than later. I'd like our financial experts and resource folks to give us all those numbers so that we see if we're on a three-year schedule of equalization, here's what happens to each bureau's budget, and we'll know when we think the pain threshold is bearable in terms of whatever winners and losers calculations there are among bureaus. Again, for everyone else who's wondering why we're spending so much time on this, the bottom line is still the same. The City of Portland will pay the same number of dollars in rent each of these years that it would have paid anyway. It's just a question of which bureau's budget it comes out of. So I guess I'd like to set them on at least this relatively benign schedule of saying, get this done by 2021 at the latest, and we might be able to roll it up sooner.
And so, Mayor, just to be clear, Commissioner Fritz makes a compelling argument for moving it up, and I'm likely to support her. I think I have bureaus that are in the short term going to be paying more, and I still support her. And what I'm interested in is understanding from the budget office and from the CFO what the implication is of moving that date forward. And I leave it to your good analysis. I think a memo of no more than 2 pages, you could probably have it to us this afternoon, and I just want to understand the impact.
Okay. And just so for the record, this was raised in the Chief of Staff's meeting yesterday, so it's not a new issue for your staff.
Okay. Other questions or discussions about this resolution? And then let's move to the third, please. Thank you. And then we'll take testimony on the whole package.
Okay, this will be quick, and Andre has about 5 minutes, and I want to tee it up. This, in one sense, should be the easiest of the resolutions, and it won't be. But it has to do with what you started off as a resolution for the council, is a community benefits agreement that was implemented with a couple of water projects. And then there's been a community benefits plan with a parks project or two. I mean, that's been an idea. And in my view, in listening to the parties, it has taken lots of time and money to administer that, to implement it. What this is intended to do is to say, let's agree, and the resolution includes a 1% commitment of the hard construction cost to community enhancements, things like workforce training, technical assistance, women in trades, and so on. I'm saying, let's say we agree with all that and that you direct us to do 1% of the hard construction costs, which may be about $1 million, and ask us, direct us, to develop a process to capture the best of all that we have learned in terms of the community benefits agreements, plans, work with the impacted parties, and come back to you with a recommendation on how those funds should be allocated. So I would like to think that there wouldn't be a lot of argument about that. It may be that some people are invested in the previous processes, but I know on the first water project, like 0.5% was given to the contractor, and then lots of time and committees, and the project took 8 months or so to get signatures of all the signatories. And I would say that maybe in 100% administrative costs to allocate the funds. When we do children's levy, we say let's keep it within 5. I think we can do the same thing, reach the same objective with lots less administrative cost if you just direct us to do that, and then we come back with a proposal. That's what this would do. Andre, I want to let you speak because you've had some experience and perspective.
So Andre Baugh, I'm a member of the steering committee, and I would say first, because we're talking about community enhancements, community benefits, this is really an iconic Portland project. It is really Portland-centric, and because of that, we're looking to those community enhancements and benefits and objectives be a broader stakeholder group than the traditional contractors and workforce. When you look at the comprehensive plan, these are community groups that traditionally are not involved in contracting but want to be involved in their community in building those projects. So it's how do we get a broader community, such as the parks is used as an example, to target certain communities to ensure that they're involved in parks projects. Looking at the traditional DMWSB workforce, you're talking about including non-traditional participants in making decisions about community goals, benefits, and objectives. And really, the resolution is to give us an opportunity to create that brings those benefits back to the community and goals that are not only to the traditional DMWESB, but also, and workforce, women and minorities, but also to Portland residents in the communities that really need those benefits. And so it's an opportunity to look at best practices from all the bureaus, but also around the state and around in different cities, and say, how can we do this to really bring home some benefits to these communities and to the city of Portland? in a transparent, accountable, achievable manner that works well with traditional Portland contracting.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Fred, we're about to lose Andre.
I've got about 2 or 3 minutes, so if you're quick.
You give us 40 hours a week anyway, Andre. The least we can do is let you make a living on the side. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Fred, a prior council adopted a, was it a resolution or an ordinance on a community benefits agreement? We adopted something, and we were...
I think it was a resolution.
It was a resolution, yeah. And we were encouraged, the city... The council encouraged bureaus to look at this model.
Correct.
And at some point, it contemplated that we would come back to council and do a review, comprehensive review by procurement of how's it working. When do we get that review?
It's sometime next calendar year. It's not done yet, and it's one of the reasons we didn't want to wait until that. We want to make the commitment and start the process going. And Christine has already said she is aimed at exceeding the WBE MBE goals. That's not the issue, but it's these other projects.
So you also in your opening statement said that we have some examples of customizing that approach. Parks customized it. There's been some flexible approaches. What's the critical difference between the resolution in front of us and the approach that you're recommending and the CBA approach that the council has embraced?
I think the critical difference is we're trying to get a bigger tent. The CBA was very focused on looking at DMWSB firms and workforce. We're trying to bring in a broader tent of participants. The housing coalitions have said, how do we participate in a construction project? So they have residents that have low income, that want to work, that have construction experience or want to get construction experience. So how do we create a sustainable long-term process to get Portland residents into the construction industry, which benefits Portland? And how do we do that on a project? The CBA has some good experience around doing that, but some of the groups are not included in that. And we're trying to get a bigger tent. Some are, some aren't. And we're just looking, how do we get this bigger tent? How do we take some of those best practices and put them all in one place for this project? So it's not saying that those experiences are, if you will, bad experiences or what Parks is doing has not worked. We just don't know. But we're going to take what we think is working and look at some other things and put them all in one place.
And Andre, is... The principle the council articulated a few years ago was to expand opportunity in our community.
Yep.
And it was to address some historical wrongs and barriers. Does the approach that is reflected in 1064, is that consistent with the approach, with the values that the council articulated when we adopted the CBA approach?
It's consistent with that approach, but it is also consistent with what the residents and citizens of Portland are saying that they want to be involved, those historic communities want to be involved, not only from a contracting but from a workforce standpoint, and they want to receive those wages that come out of projects such as this. So, yes, it's very consistent with the goals, and it really is saying taking those goals in front of us plus the community goals, and now how do we do that, and what are the methodologies, what are the objectives, and how do we report back to you in an accountable, transparent way?
So we do need to release Andre from captivity here and let him get back to his day job. Any other questions for our super volunteer before he does go actually go make
Thank you weather? Very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Andre. We appreciate you very much. Okay, any other questions for Fred and our support team here? Okay.
So I'd make one comment. We have a great advisory committee, and you've seen some of that. And I'm working, I think, with the best team I've been around, either public or private sector, to get something done. So with these resolutions, you're going to see some activity, and it's going to be direct. And you'll hear back at various times, but I think it's very positive for the city.
Thank you, Fred. Thanks very much. Okay, I think we're ready to move to public testimony. I don't believe we have any invited testimony beyond the the folks we've already heard from. So let's open it up, please. And obviously, folks, that if you're here to speak on this package of amendments, or sorry, package of resolutions, feel free to speak about any one of the three or all three as you come up.
Okay, we have a total of 13 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are John O., Jim Wittenberg, and Bruce M. Hall. And they'll be followed by Chang Sim, James Posey, and Crystal Alinsky.